Namaste. If you're sitting on the floor in the back there, you're welcome to come up here. We have seating on a mat up here in front. I'll need to get a periscope to see everyone. Who brought these beautiful flowers? Shoshana, thank you so much. They're lovely. This morning, we will begin with Shoshana reading from one of the source texts of our current retreat. This is from the Pure Space Retreat. And just, I'll stay here. Yes, and just.
Pure space. The decisive experience, basic space.
Speak loudly.
As the single expanse, supremely spacious by nature, awakened awareness, equal to space, is pivotal. Focus on this key point and distill it to its vital essence. It is the greatest of the great, wholly positive and spacious awakened awareness. In its very essence, it thoroughly shatters the confines of reality based on points of view. Within this single vast expanse, there is no duality of realization versus its lack, of freedom versus its lack, but a supreme reality of equalness. An eagle whose wings have grown within the egg glides in the expanse of the sky once it breaks out of the egg. It overwhelms gravity and crosses directly over the abysses. So also a fortunate person who has realized awakened awareness just as it is. The pinnacle of all approaches to human life outshines causality and crosses directly over the abyss of points of view. The freedom of everything resting as a supreme reality of equalness is unacceptable when involved in cause and effect, effort and achievement. But in the sublime, great freedom, it makes perfect sense as the ultimate meaning of unwavering equalness. Everything is supreme bliss, equal to space itself, the expanse of holy, positive, basic space. There is nothing that is not free within the expanse of basic space. The true nature of all points of view is decisively experienced as the essence of aware basic space. The dynamic energy of this essence is perfect within everyone. With freedom in immediate perception, awareness is experienced as holy, positive, basic space, in no way divisible.
If we want to know who we are, then it's very important to have some sense of what that means. If for many, many years we've taken ourselves to be our collection of points of view, in other words, all the points of view that are included and contained within the peer view of awareness, and all we can see are those points of view, say, these are our points of view of a personal identity, and all those points of view include within the infinite vast expanse of the peer view of awareness, then it's very important that we relax, simply relax, and allow ourselves to have a more expanded experience of ourselves as we really are. If we've taken ourselves to be a lot of different points of view, and all of our awareness in every moment is swimming around in whatever those points of view are, the points of view we've learned, in other words, the belief systems and assumptions of our family, our community, our culture, and our world, then first of all, it's most important, more than anything else, to just relax. So rather than bringing in a whole bunch of additional things we need to do, additional practices we need to maintain, first of all, we need to relax. Just rest easily without seeking anything and feel the ease of our being. And in that ease of our being, we'll learn much more about ourselves as we are than any other point of view we can bring in. Once we have some ease, then we may see some other structures that can help us, a teacher or whatever, to have a more expanded sense of ourselves. But as a starting point, we have to have some idea of what we are. Some idea of what we are. It isn't that what we are is an idea. It's just that we use ideas as communication to point out who we are. And some of those words or ideas talk about what we are as an object. So a subject looking at an object that is what we are. In other words, they only talk about what we are. It's the unification of subject and object as a non-dual expanse of equalness that is doing the talking. So these two types of communication, one that is a direct emanation of the non-dual expanse of equalness, and the other that is a subject talking about an object, are two entirely different matters. So it's very important, if we're reading anything, to read something that is a direct expression of that non-dual expanse of indivisible awareness, the non-dual vast expanse of indivisible awareness that is our true nature, rather than a subject talking about an object called awakening, liberation, being human, whatever it is. The reality of what we are, the single vast expanse of equalness, omniscient timeless awareness, vast as infinite space, has never been confined by any points of view. All points of view that arise within the pure view of all-inclusive awakened awareness are that awareness and nothing else. There's no point of view, no matter what it may be, that has ever existed elsewhere. All of the points of view of all-inclusive awakened awareness are inseparable from it, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. Now, we use that metaphor the color blue being inseparable from the sky, or the vast expanse of infinite space, as symbols to give us a direct communication of what it feels like to be who we really are. If we only used a bunch of words without any symbols, that would be an incomplete communication, because symbols work on us in an entirely different way than just regular words alone without symbols. So this coupling of the two, words we can understand that are simple and direct, with symbols that direct relate to a felt sense of what we are very, very important. And for those of you who have been coming here for some time, you know that I use the same symbols over and over again. The Great Freedom Teaching uses the same symbols over and over again. And it isn't that I can't think of anything else. It's that these symbols have a great deal of power. These symbols have a great deal of power. And the more we hear them, the more there really is that tonal echo, that vibrational quality that is beyond anything that can be described, that really works on us and enlivens this feeling of spaciousness, this reality of all-pervasive spaciousness that is the reality of our being. So, you know, we can't really say anything about how we realize who we are. We can't say a single thing about it because we really don't know. We really don't know. We just know that we are who we are, and that everything about our beautiful bodies, no matter what it may be, it is that all-inclusive awareness and nothing else. So awareness is dynamic energy, is awareness. No matter what that dynamic energy is, it is awareness. It's the basic space of awareness, pure space and nothing else. And there's no way we can cook that up. In other words, make ourselves feel that, make ourselves directly experience that. We can only relax and realize what already is. Realize what already is the essence of every perception. The perceptions are points of view, and the awareness aren't two separate things. The awareness pure and the points of view impure. They're inseparable, originally pure from the beginningless beginning. So there's no point of view whatsoever that needs to be made pure. Everything already is pure from the beginningless beginning. So when I talk about original purity, that's what I mean. I mean that everything, no matter what it is fundamentally, by its very nature, completely pure. How is it completely pure? It's completely pure in that it's never been anything other than awareness. No matter what its label may be, no matter what all these colorful descriptions, the magnificent display, the magical expressions of awareness are, no matter what the description we might come up with, its essence is only awakened awareness. Its heart essence is awakened awareness and nothing else. No point of view of the all-inclusive pure view of awakened awareness has an origin that is independent of awareness. So this is how we know that they're all awareness. There's not a single point of view that has an independent origin that stands on its own. I'm a point of view, I'm not awareness, and this is the way it is. There's no point of view that's like that. So if we have certain points of view that seem like they aren't part of awareness, when those come up, it's especially important for us to just rest, to be totally at ease, and to feel the reality of the direct experience of that point of view, no matter what it is, as awareness. No matter what kind of approach we have to waking up, whether it's intensive sadhana done within some kind of a spiritual form, practice, or religion, or whether it's just going about ordinary conventional life, if that's our sadhana, then at some point we're going to have to come face to face with the non-spiritual and the spiritual being equal. they're equal. They're totally indivisible. There's nothing about conventional life that isn't spiritual, and nothing about spiritual life that isn't conventional. So, you know, some of the forms we choose, it's important to know that at some point, no matter how beautiful, wonderful, incredible, and fantastic those forms may be, that we will realize that those forms are equal with everything else. That, you know, maybe all of the pujas we've been doing, the statues and other icons that we've had as part of our practice, no matter what they may be, we start to see that icon in everything, you know, whatever it is. We see Shiva. Isn't today Shiva Day and the feast day of Shiva here in India? Or we see Kali, or we see Tara, or we see whatever it may be. We see Christ. Christ is all of a sudden everywhere. No matter where we're looking, all points of view, more and more of them seem to be Christ, or whatever our deity may be that we've focused on in our practice. And maybe we haven't focused on a deity, or none of that's been part of our lives, and we've just been going about our business in Western culture or in India, having the life of a householder or an ordinary person doing this or that. It really matters not. No matter what our form has been, natural rest is the only way we're going to come to a definitive conclusion about the reality of what we are. Because all those forms, no matter what they may be, are the essence of awareness and nothing else. So when we rest naturally, when we rest easily, when we rest completely without seeking anything, when we rest naturally for short moments repeated many times, more and more we realize this essence of what we are as the complete purity and perfection that includes all points of view. So essentially, there's nothing that need be done. There's nothing at all that need be done. What there is to do has already been done. We already are who we are. We already are who we are. And the more we get involved in doing, oh, I've got to do something to find out who I am. Got to do something. Got to do this thing or that thing. What I'm doing right now, it isn't okay. It's not okay. I'll never find out who I am by doing this thing that I'm doing. Better do something else. Better add more in because I'm not realizing who I am. When we add more in, there's just more of this tornado, more of this swirl of points of view all over the place. And we're one of the points of view in that tornado. We're just whipped around. We don't know which way to go. Even sometimes if we develop great calm and tranquility in our practice or in our ordinary life without a practice, maybe we don't have a practice, we just feel more calm and tranquility, and it just feels so good. Well, that's really wonderful, and that's great too, but calm and tranquility, these are also points of view. Stillness, quiet, all of these things, they're all points of view. We may feel more settled, but at some point, we're going to need to begin to include more. You know, the noise, that's awakened awareness too. That's the emanation of sublime speech. All sounds, no matter what they are, of all kinds, are the emanation of sublime speech and nothing else. Everything that is seen, no matter what it is, all sights of all kinds are the emanation of sublime awareness and nothing else. Everything we touch, no matter what it is, it's the touch of sublime awareness and nothing else. Everything we smell, foul or wonderful, the most expensive perfume in the world, I wouldn't want to smell that, but maybe a flower. I enjoy smelling flowers like these flowers right here. Or maybe walking down the street and there's some cow dung. It's all the emanation of sublime awareness and nothing else. So the whole world of opposites it collapses. It collapses as the basic space of awareness. All of these perceptions, no matter what they are pure space and nothing else. We can't figure any of that out. We can't arrive at it through intellectual speculation or representational thought. No matter how sublime our representational thought or intellectual speculation maybe, at some point that too resolves in basic space. There's just nothing to be said or done. There's only this great reality of equalness and nothing else. True non-duality, entirely beneficial in nature, all-inclusive, the single blissful expanse of equalness. The more of these points of view that are integrated, that resolve in the basic space of our own awareness, the more relaxed we feel. So relaxation is how we come to directly experience everything as awakened awareness. And we actually feel that. It's a relaxation, a complete ease in our bodies. We can look in the mirror and see it. We can see it in our faces, that we can say, oh, gee, I look 10 years younger than I did when I first heard about this. This is such a relief to know that everything really is equal. Even though we may have been focusing on non-duality, maybe there have been some subtle things that we thought really weren't non-dual. They really weren't the expanse of equalness. They weren't the sublime expanse of evenness. Maybe we had just a few subtle things we thought didn't fit in there. Maybe some things, you know, we really didn't want to talk to anybody else about. In fact, we were sure we couldn't talk to anyone else about them. Yeah, subtle desires maybe, or something like that, that we thought maybe at some point we'd have some kind of a, you know, those spinal anesthetics where they kind of block everything off from the waist down. We thought maybe our practice would lead to that, you know, maybe we wouldn't even have any stirrings of subtle desire anymore. Well, you know, if, oh, I'm not saying that anyone ever really thought that, but maybe. And you know, sometimes these are things that are actively spoken about, but you know what? I've never met anyone who's been able to turn them off. Not really. Once they get down to really telling me all their secrets, I find, you know, there's that little subtle stirring and desire in there somewhere. Well, look at us. You know, we're filled with vitality. There's something stirring in there all the time. It's all good, too. You know, it's wholly positive basic space and nothing else. So when it comes to these things that we think, well, maybe, you know, they really aren't part of this wonderful expanse of aware basic space that I am, or, you know, maybe we've heard these ideas from other people, then when those come up, it's very important that we have someone we can talk to those about, because they can help us understand and affirm for us that they are wholly positive, that they are wholly positive basic space and nothing else. They're not some kind of non-spiritual demon jumping up that's trying to expunge our awareness, erase it, or get in the way of it. It's awareness saying, hey, here I am in this form too. Here I am in this form too. Take a look at me here. Well, you know, anything we're trying to keep out of awareness, keep out of being spiritual, oh, this thing isn't spiritual, it's too gooey, messy, fun, or whatever it is. Anything we're trying to keep out, at some point we're going to have to face. So if we think our anger isn't the sublime expanse of awareness, if we think that our sadness isn't, or our depression, or all these different things that all human beings have, our sexual desire, our desire to have money to take care of ourselves, foods we like to eat, you know, maybe we have a very refined diet of vegetarianism, and then once in a while, when no one's looking, we'll go eat a hamburger or something like that. And we've always wondered about that hamburger. Does it really... Can I really be enlightened and still eat hamburgers? That's the question. Or, you know, whatever it is. So, you see, anything that we're subtly or overtly keeping out of the picture of the vast expanse of awareness, at some point we're going to have to realize that whatever that is, it is the reality of awareness and nothing else. But, you know, we really don't have to do anything. We don't have to do anything. We just need to relax. And sometimes people just come here and they'll say to me after, oh, gee, you know, I remember a man who came once, and he'd never been to a satsang before in his life. He just heard about it from his sister. And he just finished his PhD in clinical psychology at the University of California. And he came the first time, he sat in the front row, and after I talked for a while, he raised his hand, and he just started talking like the greatest being who had ever lived. You know, all of this warmth was just pouring out of his mouth, and all of these beautiful words, and it just seemed like he'd been to hundreds of satsangs. you know, that he'd been to hundreds of satsangs, past, present, and future. He'd been to them all. And in talking to him, he said, oh, no, this is the first time I've been to anything like this. He said, I never knew anything like this existed, but he said, it's so familiar. It's so warm. I'll never have any doubt ever again that I am this. I just know this above all else. So you see, it doesn't have to be any one way. When we come here, we can just totally relax and allow ourselves to take over ourselves. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. Oh yes, that's another thing to say. There's nothing to be afraid of. No matter what thought we may have, no matter what emotion, no matter what twinge or twitch in our bodies, whatever it is, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing that we have to try to hold down or hold out of the way or keep it quiet. Nothing at all. We are who we are, and everything that we are is this aware basic space and nothing else. I'll read from the text that Shoshana read so beautifully in the beginning, and I'll comment on it paragraph by paragraph. As the single expanse, supremely spacious by nature, awakened awareness equal to space is pivotal. Focus on this key point and distill it to its vital essence. It is the greatest of the great. Wholly positive and spacious, awakened awareness. In its very essence, it thoroughly shatters the confines of reality based on points of view. Within this single vast expanse, there is no duality of realization versus its lack, of freedom versus its lack, but a supreme reality of equalness. So the key point is that we are awakened awareness. We are a single vast expanse of awakened awareness that has never been confined by anything. When we rest naturally, when we rest easily as that awareness, it shatters the confines of all our points of view, no matter how entrenched those points of view may have seemed to be. The points of view that we've accumulated over a lifetime, the points of view of our family, our community, our culture, and our world, the points of view of everything that we've taken ourselves to be, all of those are shattered, but not in a harsh or awful way, in a way of incredible tenderness and warmth, where we have this felt sense of who we are, and that felt sense of who we are arises in the body as the warmth, an actual physical warmth of bliss, of love, of compassion, of wisdom, of love, wisdom, bliss, and compassion that cannot be cultivated because it's inherent. We can't do anything to get it. We can only be totally at ease, and as we are, this warmth is evident in us. It's always been there, it just hasn't been recognized because focus has been on point of view. And then maybe, too, we've added a few other points of view about awakening to all those points of view. And those points of view may be that there is a realization that we're going to attain sometime and that we lack it right now. So we hope that we'll attain it sometime and we fear that we won't. And we're constantly bouncing back and forth between this hope that we'll attain it and the fear that we won't. So especially when those points of view come up, to rest and be at ease, to know that what we are is already accomplished, that there is no realization or its lack, that awareness, all-inclusive awakened awareness, is timelessly, omnisciently free. And what that means is that even if we have a point of view like, I'm not awake, that point of view is timelessly free. It's never known any time. It's never known any expanse of something occurring and something not. It's just already awakened awareness that has never been confined about by any point of view, and especially these points of view of freedom or its lack. There neither is freedom nor its lack. There is neither someone to be realized, nor someone to realize anything, nor something to be realized. There's only this expanse of evenness. The one who thinks that there's someone to be realized is just a point of view in awakened awareness. Well, when we relax and we know ourselves more as awakened awareness, inclusive of all points of view, more and more we can see that these points of view too about getting enlightened or doing practice leading to enlightenment or some kind of enlightenment to be attained in the future or someone doing something to attain enlightenment, all these are just points of view arising within our vast expanse of awakened awareness. In actuality, we've never taken ourselves to be anything because there is no one to take themselves to be anything. But how could we ever figure that out by jumping around from one point of view to another? We can't. So we rest without contrivance. The natural yoga, the yoga of natural rest that has been handed down from generation to generation for thousands of years. We rest naturally without seeking anything. And as we do so, this kiss, this bliss of our being, it's just so obvious. It's so obvious. And once we have one of those troublesome points of view come up, each one of you here, think about one of those points of view you might have that maybe you thought, if you have one, that you thought, well, that really isn't awareness, you know, that isn't spiritual, that's a point of view I can't have and ever be enlightened. Think of one of those. Think of a point of view that doesn't fit within enlightenment, and then just rest, you know, rest and see as that point of view comes up that it arises within the expanse of your evenness. It arises within the expanse of all inclusive awakened awareness, that the idea of a you arises as that expanse, the you who has this point of view that can't get enlightened somehow, that it arises as the non-dual expanse, and then see how it just vanishes naturally of its own accord. It vanishes naturally, leaving no trace. That you couldn't hold on to it even if you wanted to. Even if you wanted to hold on to that point of view of being somebody who can't get enlightened, you couldn't possibly do it. It would be impossible, because all these points of view, they're like a line drawn in water. When we draw a line in water, it appears, abides, and disappears simultaneously. There's nothing we can say about it. And all the points of view, all the dynamic energy of awareness, this luster of awareness that is point of view, it vanishes naturally in the same way. It dissolves in and of itself. It's its own undoing. There's nothing that needs to be done about it. Everything is pure space, one pure space. one pure space, just one pure space. So all these points of view, they're the luster of pure space and nothing else. If we went into pure space and we tried to separate its light out from it, well, that would be impossible. Well, so too, you know, all these points of view, they're the luster of pure space. We can't separate them out. There's no awakening, enlightenment, liberation, separate or apart from all these points of view. You see, awareness, there's no awareness separate or apart from these points of view. So awakened awareness, enlightened awareness as points of view. It's not separating out into some kind of transcended, non-conceptual state where there aren't any points of view. That's a point of view too. So, you know, if we have that kind of wonderful non-conceptual state, it may just feel so much better than anything we've ever experienced in our life, because there's nothing going on, none of these points of view. But that's a point of view too. After all, what's aware of that non-conceptual state? So you see, we need to rest as that which is primary in every perception. Awareness primary is a non-conceptual state. Awareness primary is all conceptual states. Awareness primary is every single point of view without exception. Never been a point of view of any kind that exists elsewhere other than awareness. Just this wonderful totality of evenness. The totality of evenness that isn't something that we need to get. It's the reality of what we already are. Are there any questions now?
Dave? Did you say that dreams help in developing finding your true self or true awareness or whatever? Is this true or not? Because I rarely dream.
Oh, uh-huh.
Or I dream but I don't remember them. Mm-hmm. I wish you dream every night.
What is a dream?
Awareness.
Very good. It's very good. I like that. Yes, a dream is awareness, and the vivid appearance of awareness as the dream, the description of the dream, all these images that appear as the vast expanse of awareness. So we have a dream. All points of view, no matter what they are, they're like a dream image, like a mirage, like the sound in an echo. They're nothing but pure space. When it gets down to it, they're nothing but pure space. There's nothing we can hold on to there. So there's the waking dream and the sleeping dream, you might say. And when, I suppose you're pointing to the sleeping dreams in particular. When we rest naturally and get to know ourselves as awareness, just in a totally natural way, you know, we can wait for the Big Bang of awareness if we want to, but it's very unlikely that that'll ever occur. You know, that happens so rarely. But what we can count on is that when we rest naturally, we familiarize ourselves more and more with the reality of our own luminous awareness. It's right here. We don't have to go anywhere to get it, not even to India. We're all in India, but we don't have to go here to get it. You know, that's sort of like being in Toronto and then you say to someone else, oh, you know, I really want to get to Toronto. Can you help me? And they say, oh, go 26,000 miles east and you'll get to Toronto. Or they say, oh, go to India and then you'll get to Toronto. Or meditate for 30 years, then you'll get to Toronto. Well, you don't want to talk to anybody like that, you know. You want to meet someone who will say, hey, man, you're in Toronto. Hey, dude, you're in Toronto. Wake up. So, you know, this is very important. So we already are awareness. We already are the full blast of awareness that includes everything, including the cosmic blast. So we are that. We are that. All points of view are included and contained within us. The more we familiarize ourselves with that, the more it is pervasive 24/7. So it does include dreams and sleep. In my own sleep, for example, there's luminous awareness throughout the night, luminous awareness at sleep. So the more we're familiar with ourselves as awareness, the more it's obvious. But when we haven't been looking at ourselves as that, then it's not obvious. So this is a very simple proposition. It's not rocket science or anything like that. We just, with ease, realize who we are. We don't have to change anything about our life to do this. Whatever we're doing in our life is perfect and complete in itself. So if we live in an ashram and we have an incredible sadhana and all of our sangha and friends we've had forever, we don't have to leave there to find awareness. If we're a Catholic nun or priest and suddenly we hear about non-duality and we want that more than anything, we don't have to leave to realize who we are. We may not find many people to talk to, but we can realize who we are, because the heart essence of all practices, no matter what they are, is the single expanse of evenness. Whatever we talk about, whether we talk about it as union with God or union with dreams or whatever it is the single expanse of omniscient, timeless awareness. So the more we rest, the more we rest easily, we will realize that about ourselves. Whether we're a priest or a nun or a monk or a yogi of some kind, or we're someone who's living the life of a householder, the more we rest naturally and easily, with each of our points of view, it is a puja. Each of our points of view, it is the ultimate meditation. Each of our points of view, it is the most beautiful, incredible, wondrous, fantastic sadhana. Every single one of the points of view, it is that. Pranam to these points of view. You know, these points of view, there is no awakening outside these points of view. None whatsoever. There's no awakening whatsoever outside these points of view. So you see, everything that we learn as part of our practice, ideally at some point we'll see all this. We'll see, oh, you know, all this while, all the deities that I've had so much reverence for, I see that all my points of view are the deity, including the point of view of myself. that you know, the pranams I've been doing to this one and that one, and maybe to an icon or whatever it is, all the pranams I've been doing to myself. You know, I've maybe for a while I thought about it as something else, but now more and more I'm seeing it as myself. Now this is wonderful. This is the fruition of our heart longing when we've lived our lives so devoted to knowing the truth. This is the fruition of what we have longed for so deeply. So sometimes we may be in a tradition where there aren't many people realizing the same thing, but that's okay. It doesn't need that we need to be excluding ourselves from ourselves. We just rest, and more, we don't need to run away or make them wrong or anything like that. We just rest, and more we see the beauty in everything. We see the beauty in everything. We see all of a sudden that everyone who isn't recognizing awareness, that they're awareness too. There's no one who's never ever not recognized awareness. There, when we realize we're not confused and we've never been confused, we realize there's no one else who's been confused either. So rather than seeing all those people who don't live in the ashram over against all those people who do, or all those who don't live in the monastery over against those who do, or all those who don't recognize awareness over against the great ones who do, everyone recognizes awareness. There's no one who hasn't recognized awareness. So, you know, this is, it's really, it's wondrous, and it lights up everything. It lights up the body from head to toe. There's no way to hold it back. You know, everything is what it is. Everything is what it is. Nothing has ever been excluded. There's no dark side and light side. The light is dark and the dark is light, and there's nothing that can be said about it. But if we try to think about that too much, we'll just be in another prison of a conceptual framework, a frame of reference. So all we can do is be at ease, totally be at ease with whatever the wonder of what we're doing in our lives is. And as we relax so deeply, so completely, we find that natural ease that is the heart essence of whatever our practice has been. These practices, no matter what they are, the great ones who made them up never intended them to be some kind of tortuous ordeal. I just know this for certain. They were never meant to be an ordeal or some kind of thing where we'd make ourselves feel even worse about ourselves than we already did when we started the practice. Oh dear. No, we don't want that to happen. You know, we have to know that anyone who designed our practice, that they were a greatly compassionate being, and anything they were suggesting or that we may have seen them do, so we did it too, that it was just bringing complete ease to their life in every conceivable way, and that when it was suggested to us, it was certainly hoped and intended that this ease would be the case for us as well. So if there are things that are going on in your life, whether you're a householder or a yogi or whatever you're calling yourself, I can't possibly cover all the names that we take ourselves to be. I'd be here a long time, wouldn't I? Just be at ease. Be totally at ease as you are with whatever that point of view is. Just know that point of view, it is you. It is the blessed you. It is the dynamic energy of awareness or nothing else. Or if you call it God, that's fine too. It's God, or it's the Divine Mother, or the Great Spirit, or there are so many names these days. And we know them all because we can Google them all on the internet. We know more about this than forever before. But just know that all the names are the kiss of God. It doesn't matter what they are. It just doesn't matter. So I know you've all heard these things hundreds of times probably, but just know that it really, really is true, and that the direct experience of it is the direct experience of everyone, with no one left out. So there's no one who's ever been left out from realization. No great beings and ordinary beings. All ordinary beings are great beings, and all great beings are ordinary beings. You see, when we talk about great beings or the realm of great beings, we're not talking about a place that, well, we don't really know where it is. We've heard it talked about, but maybe it's on a mountaintop somewhere, the top of a sacred mountain, or maybe it's sort of a realm in space that we can't really see. But what it really is us. It's our own awakened awareness. When we talk about the realm, the awakened body, speech, and mind, that is the awakened body, speech, and mind of the victorious ones of past, present, and future, the victorious ones who've realized who they are, of the three times, we're talking about ourselves, our own awareness. It's awareness as that point of view of the possibility of this existing. When we relax more and more, our body, speech, and mind that we've taken to be wrapped up in all these points of view, they're not very relaxed as long as they're wrapped up in the points of view. We can't think straight. What comes out of our mouth a lot of times is unexpected, and we go, ooh, didn't mean to say that, you know. That's not in my spiritual practice to talk like that. Or, you know, we might even do something that's, it's another one of those things, ooh, hope the guru didn't see me doing that one, you know. So all these things, you see, as long as we're wrapped up in points of view, we can't help but expressing in those ways. It's just the way it is. But when we start to relax our thinking, it too becomes like space. Our thinking becomes like space, vast as infinite space. Our speech, we don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, because we find that inherently we have a mind, we have a speech, we have a body that are vast as infinite space. And these three, the body, speech, and mind, are inseparable. When we relax just totally at ease as the essence of our being, what comes out of our thinking and our speaking and our action, it's something that could never, never occur. All wrapped up in point of view, just because we aren't relaxed enough. Because most of the time we think we have to do, we have to effort, we have to achieve, we have to learn, and then we can be awake. And so when we hear that we just need to relax, and then we can more and more see that we're already awake, it doesn't sound like that could be right. Because what's better than anything? Awakening. I think everyone here would agree with that, probably, but is there anyone here who doesn't agree with that? You know, it's the reality of what we are as human beings. So when we, that reality that is more important than anything, when we hear that that can come about only through ease and natural rest, that this is the direct way. This is the direct method, the direct perception of awareness, not at some point in the future, but right here. Then we think, oh, well, that's too easy. I've been doing all this work, and this sounds too easy. But just know that whatever the point of view is, it's the throne of natural rest. So it's the divine throne of natural rest. That's what it is. There's no point of view that is not that. If there's any point of view that seems like it isn't that, then just rest, and it will be obvious that it is. And this includes everything that occurs in the waking dream and the dream at night. So the more we rest naturally in our dreams, too, we find luminous awareness, clear awareness all night long, something we maybe never had heard about or even dreamt was possible. We could have never imagined that. But you see, every night in our dreams, we really are luminously aware. We just haven't familiarized ourselves with the reality that we are. Once we do, it's like, wow, I never sleep. So this is what awaken means. It's awakening in all bodily states, waking, dreaming, or sleeping. Awake, that's why the word awake 24/7. It doesn't mean awake like this 24/7. It means the luminous awareness that's never been asleep. As each of us is aware 24/7, and that awareness is pristine and clearly real. So, you know, this isn't something that we need to compete for. We're not competing with anyone else. We should never compare ourselves to anyone other than us. Just if you want to compare yourself to someone, compare yourself to yourself in your own time of growing familiar with the natural ease of what you are. And just gradually and naturally, your dreams too will have this pervasive, spacious awareness that is truly real all night long. So there's nothing to do. There's no practice to do. Something more about that?
You mentioned vegetarianism and that an enlightened person could eat meat and still be enlightened. And yesterday in Inquiry 2, we were told about compassionate emptiness. Mm-hmm. And I wondered how the suffering that's inherent in eating meat, how that ties in with being able to eat it and still being fully aware.
That's a good question. Well, you know, of course it's important for us to be compassionate, whether we're living within the realm of cause and effect or we are living as the full evidence of that which is beyond cause and effect. When we live within the realm of cause and effect, we need to cultivate compassion. That's the only way it seems that we can get it. The easy way is to rest naturally, and then compassion is so obvious that it just can't be restrained. It's just spewing all over the place, you know. It can't be held back. It's like turning on the spigot and then ripping off the spigot and throwing it away. It's just the great gush of tender compassion question that fills everything throughout all times. So, you know, when we are arriving at an idea of compassion through intellectual speculation and doing based on cause and effect, then we can come up with all kinds of ideas about what is compassionate and what is not. But what I suggest to you is to just rest naturally as the ease of your own being. Allow this compassion that always is to flower, and then see what this is for yourself. See what compassion is for yourself. You'll know. You'll know. But there's absolutely nothing that's excluded. There's nothing that's excluded. Say we take a principle, a time-honored principle, that is, of course, tremendously important, never more important than at this time in human history, such as non-harming, to not be harmful. Now, this, of course, is a very important principle, and it's important to us whether we're living within the realm of cause and effect or whether we're living beyond cause and effect. And beyond cause and effect, it's naturally occurring. Non-harming is naturally occurring. But if we live within the realm of cause and effect, then we're going to have to start to speculate about what non-harming means. If we look at the word non-harming, its essence is awakened awareness. So that's its essential meaning, its ultimate meaning, awakened awareness. And if we go beyond that into the description, then we will have an infinite regress of points of view about what non-harming means. Some people will say it means this thing. Some people will say it means that thing. Not if we say you don't eat meat, then we're saying, okay, certain kinds of beings are more exalted than other beings. That's the conclusion we're arriving at. That certain kinds of beings, animal beings, are more important or a better kind of being than a stalk of broccoli. Do you see what I'm saying? So when we rest naturally and easily, we have the power of vast mind to look at these things as they really are. We can come to a thorough understanding. And we can also come to a very ready ability to have very powerful and compassionately forceful means at our disposal to rectify all kinds of problems, whether it's animal cruelty or whatever it is. We'll see all of a sudden on the horizon of our own awareness a solution that maybe no one has ever thought of before. No one has ever could ever possibly think about it from the world of cause and effect. It's impossible. But you know, right now, as humankind, we don't have time any longer to try to think out all these things and make sense of them. We just have to get busy and rest. Get busy and rest. Just allow the natural ease of our being to come to the fore. And with that, there's a power and force to be reckoned with. A power and force to be reckoned with. That we, as a global humankind, can come together in a grassroots way and say, you know, this is who we are as humankind, this is who we've always been, and this is our compassionate outpouring for all of the world. So, you know, we have to realize that we don't live solely within cause and effect. You see, cause and effect, it can't even fathom the idea of a human being beyond causality. That can't even be fathomed from a mind that's all wrapped up in cause and effect. But a mind that is at rest as the vast expanse of being is beyond causality. It includes cause and effect, but it doesn't operate only within the realm of cause and effect. It can affect cause and effect. So this is very important and very powerful to know about ourselves. This is the only way that new forms of compassionate force, of compassionate immensity can come into being. We can't solve our problems from cause and effect. Everyone knows this. You know, I was talking to my mother yesterday. She said, oh, I'm glad you're over there doing something about this. You know, now my mother, she'll be 88 April 5th, and she is a Catholic. She's a Roman Catholic, and she is a devout Catholic. She and her mother, oh, the devoutest of all Catholics. I would have never been opened up into the world of devotion if I hadn't met my grandmother and my mother. You know, through them, from the beginning of my life, I knew that there was something beyond cause and effect. So this was very good. You know, this was very good. So see, my mother, even though she's 88 years old, she's not hopeless. She is one of those big flat screen TVs, you know, and she watches it all. She watches all the news, the maiming, the killing. She doesn't need to exclude anything. She can hold it all in her compassionate embrace. And she, you know, she's still saying something has to be done. And she was telling me about this place where she lives now. There are many old people who live there, hundreds of old people. And it's owned by the Sisters of the Holy Name. And she saw something going on there that she didn't like. And she thought that this it was wrong for old people to be exposed to all this noise and the trash trucks coming and going with their beepers going off at 6 in the morning. So my mother went right to the president of the organization and she said, this is wrong, you know, we need something done here. You've got to move that somewhere else, and it's causing suffering to some of the people living here. So he said, well, thanks for speaking up, you know. And then while they implemented the changes, they took her and showed her those changes. So from the beginning of my life, my mother taught me to not mince words. And that's what she said to me yesterday. She said, you know me, I don't mince words. And I said, yes, I'm so glad you don't, because see, I learned that. As you can tell, I don't mince words. I go straight to the bottom of the matter. So you see, my mother, through her devotional practice of Catholicism, over the years she just got more and more relaxed and more compassionate, and never any limit on growth. It wasn't like at 40 she stopped growing or anything like that. Her compassion is infinite and endless, so it's a vast expanse. It can't be contained. She could live forever, and her vast expanse of compassion would continue to emanate great benefit for herself and everyone around her. So, you know, this is what I mean about a simple human life lived as the emanation of compassion. When we only know ourselves to be within cause and effect, we don't see that anything else is possible. But when we relax, we have an immensity of problem-solving capabilities at our disposal, not only to benefit ourselves, but to benefit our family, community, and world. It can't help occur for us and at all, everyone and all at once. You see, this is it's simultaneously occurring. So no matter what we've heard about any of these things, it's really important, whether it's eating meat or whatever it is, we have to come to conclusions for ourselves about what this means. What does non-harming really mean? Well, non-harming ideally would be for every human being on earth to rest naturally as the already accomplished ease of their being that is totally beyond causality, and as a tremendous force of compassion sweeping the globe, come to terms with the problems humankind has created for itself. You know, all these things, they didn't happen on their own. The depletion of the ozone layer, the oceans rising, the nuclear weapons pointed at each other, the famine that affects 85% of the people in the world. These things didn't come about on their own. They came about through humankind. And they're not spontaneous occurrences of consciousness or some of these other things that are talked about these days that we have no control over. Everything, you see, is within the purview of all-inclusive awakened awareness. There's nothing left out, so there's no solution that's left out. Even if we can't imagine it from cause and effect, when we rest, we come up with solutions. That no one ever thought of, even in places that are totally war-torn, like the Middle East. It takes only one person to rest completely and see something that no one else has ever thought about to bring peace to everyone. Something that goes completely beyond all this talking that leaders do between each other. So it's just like the example of the Great Freedom Teaching. It's an example of a compassionate outpouring. You see, compassionate being, it knows no limits or restrictions, so it doesn't have to talk about things in any certain way. It doesn't matter what anyone else has said about the matter of enlightenment, for example. It doesn't need to be talked about in any special way. If we relax and we just say, well, you know, what would truly be non-harming in terms of teachings of enlightenment? Well, it would really be, what would totally be non-harming would be that it be communicated with such beauty and ease that any human being could understand that they already are that. But as we can see, all of our forms right now really haven't given us that. But it doesn't, but that, you know, that's all within cause and effect. When we're beyond causality, all of a sudden we see, wow, there is a way. You know, there is a way to directly communicate this message of all-pervasive enlightenment that's already occurring to everyone and all. It's a simple human matter. You know, we look at what works. When we have a way that really expresses something to others in a way that they can understand it, it speaks simply. It's a straightforward speaking. You know, a speaking of the heart that just says, this is what you are, and this is the easy way for you to know who you are. It's as simple as that. But it doesn't mean that anything is excluded. It doesn't mean that it's trying to shut down all the other forms or anything like that. It means everything's included. Everybody's invited to the party. There's no one who isn't invited to the party. See, that's a non-harming party, where everyone's invited. We know about all these other parties. We haven't been invited to some of those parties. But this is the party where everyone's invited. In fact, everyone's already at the party. So, you know, we are who we are, and no one can ever change that. But at the same time, it's up to us to realize it. No one can make us realize it, and no one can take it away from us. And if we're looking for someone to really support us in realizing it, then we want to know that it's someone who can really deliver the results, so to speak. And how do we know that? Well, we know that, first of all, by the evidence of that in the person that we're going to support us. Then we know it too because that person can introduce us to a direct experience of our awareness in the beginning when we first meet them, not somewhere down the line 30 or 40 years hence. And then that person that we choose for support can also confer the means for us to make it fully evident at all times. So through key points and pivotal instructions, they can say, boom, bam, bam, you know, this is an easier way for you to rest. So these are the things that it's important to look for. And then also we want to look around and see if anyone else who's around the person is really realizing this. You know, it's just like if we go to buy a TV set. Well, we want to go to a store that has TV sets. We don't want to go to a store that doesn't have TV sets. If we keep going back to a store that doesn't have TV sets for decades, well, you know, that's our problem. Just keeping, you know, hoping that there'll be a TV set there. Well, none of us would do that. So you see, this it's elementary discernment. Very elementary discernment. All of us have this. We're already totally discerning beyond anything that could ever be imagined. So you see, this reality of rest, of total and complete rest that is the ease of our being, it's an adventure. It's not a grueling ordeal. It's not a grueling ordeal. And nothing is excluded.
to follow up on that last question, how did resting naturally resolve that question of vegetarianism or eating meat in your own case?
Mostly I am vegetarian. Occasionally I do eat meat, but very rarely. One of the, in looking into all of the incredible great traditions of enlightenment in the world, one of the things that occurred to me is that, you know, at one time it's believed everyone was enlightened, and then there were certain catastrophic changes that occurred, and fear crept into some people, and that this was the beginning of a period when not as many people were enlightened any longer. So it could be that at one time the many people who were enlightened lived in countries where there was nothing to eat other than a vegetarian diet. So this could be the case. So then someone said, oh, I must have to eat a vegetarian diet in order to be enlightened. We don't know how any of these things came about. But what I do know is that definitively and conclusively in your own being, as your own being, resting naturally is the heart essence of the great totality, which is what you are. You will know everything there is to know about that. You don't have to do one thing or another. And you certainly don't need to do what everyone else says you need to do. You can do it or not, but you must come to terms with everything you've been told to do as a point of view, as your own point of view. You know, that there's neither a thing you have to do or you don't have to do. It's just like the Buddha said, throw away the meditation cushion. He said, you don't have to sit cross-legged. You can sit any way at all. You are Buddha nature, no matter how you're sitting. You can run around in your Buddha nature. You can lie down in your Buddha nature. You can climb a tree in your Buddha nature. No matter what you're doing, you're Buddha nature. Walking around, sleeping, studying, working, making love. No matter what it is, you are Buddha nature. There's nothing left out. But you see, the realization that really, really is true all the time comes about through direct experience in the midst of that.
From days I've done so far, there seems to be a distinction that you make between intuition and awareness. From my tradition, it's being taught that intuition is the pinnacle. I'm just interested as to what that distinction is and why you make it.
Well, I don't use the word intuition anywhere in the inquiries other than in Inquiry 2. The Great Freedom Teaching in Inquiry 2 mentions intuition as a point of view. Uh-huh. And so you're saying that in your tradition, intuition and awareness are synonymous?
They're equivalents. The intuition that's talked about in my tradition would be equivalent to the awareness that you use
all-inclusive awakened awareness. You please call it anything you want. I'm not trying to replace your vocabulary. But the natural ease of intuition is already the case for you. But you see, if I use the term intuition when I spoke to people, 7 billion people, there are a lot of people who would think intuition is one thing and others who would think it was another thing. But if I use the word awareness, then every human being can understand that, because there's no human being anywhere who isn't aware. And there's no one anywhere who can say, no, I'm not aware. I'm not aware. In saying they're not aware, we know they are aware that they're aware. So you see, this awareness is the root of everything, but this awareness is not trapped in here. It's not in a prison of flesh and bone and blood and muscles and all that. The awareness, if we've taken it to be trapped in there, imprisoned in there, if we just allow ourselves to be at ease, it'll gradually just seem more and more spacious. We can look into the sky and allow our awareness to mingle, to blend with the vast expanse. But if you want to call it intuition, please do, and talk to your friends using that term. That's great. But you know, any label, no matter what it is, awareness is primary in that label. So if we say intuition, there has to be awareness as intuition. You see, without awareness, intuition would not be in the common way that it's spoken about. But intuition, I can see how awakened awareness could be called intuition, because it's a sublime knowing. You know, it's a sublime knowing. It's sublime knowing that goes beyond the ordinary ability to know things from point of view. And it's no more learning, so there's nothing that needs to be learned. When we realize we are intuition or awakened awareness or whatever you want to call it, we realize that all knowledge is included and contained within us. We've never had to go anywhere to get knowledge. We already are all knowledge. So, yes, please use intuition, and don't hit the permanent delete button on your keyboard for intuition. You can use that word. You know, all these points of view, no matter what they are, they're just like a web page appearing and disappearing. We can't really say where a web page came from. And then when we hit the back button, we can't really say where it went either. You know, it just disappears naturally, leaving no trace. And some of us don't. You know, all these things on all the web pages, look at their display. They're so magnificent. Endless, billions, trillions of web pages. Well, all they really are is zeros and ones. Zeros and ones put together in all these different ways to make all those colors. So boom, why not take it one step further and realize that it's all just the emanation of awakened awareness and nothing else. That's all that is. It's all that's going on. But you know, now as human beings, we have this wondrous form of communication. It's so clear that we are awareness, including all points of view. We have communications with many people. We never even see their bodies. We couldn't even prove that they have one. You know, so just relax and enjoy the magnificent display of yourself as awakened awareness. Yeah, it's just, you know, like Jesus said, the Father and I are one and you and I are the same. So what does that mean? It means indivisible, non-dual. No matter who the great being is that has talked, who has talked about this, their message has been a direct message of non-duality that is beneficial in nature. There's no great being who has ever directly communicated the direct experience of awareness who has not been entirely beneficial in nature.
But Jesus also said that there are things that my Father knows that I know not. Does that accord with your experience?
Well, you know, now if you look into that Jesus said, it can mean all kinds of things. But if you rest, you're going to find out something about that statement you didn't see before. So I was a little Catholic girl, you know, most of you here know that. And I was so devoted. I had my grandmother and mother who were so devoted. So, you know, I was on my knees. I was in my little bed having visions, you know, of Mary and Joseph and feeling totally protected from nightmares when I was a little kid, you know. So, and I loved my Catholic missal. You know, I wanted to know everything in there and understand what it all meant. I loved to go to church and hear the bells ring, Kyrie eleison, all that, because it was all in Latin at that time. Oh, I loved it. It spoke to my heart. It made me feel so free. I never wanted to be anywhere else. Well, you know, 25 years ago, boom, when all of a sudden I realized what all that meant, all of the things that I had ever read in my Catholic missals, all of the liturgy I had ever been exposed to, and believe me, I was exposed to an immense body. It all, I knew what it meant. Not just the way in which it had been talked about by most of the clerics I had been exposed to, but I knew what every word meant. Eternity, I knew what that meant. You know? Not only that, I was the lived experience of it. So, body of Christ, no matter what it was. So it was wondrous, you know, the Virgin Mary, that we're each the Virgin Mary, you know, this immaculate virgin birth, it occurs within us. You know, we each give birth to Christ. So all these things I understood. So this is what I'm saying about the quote you just mentioned. Rest naturally in all these quotes you've heard from everybody. No matter what they are, you'll know just what they mean.
You're not telling us. You're saying you know what they mean, but you have to rest naturally to believe.
You don't need anybody to tell you what it means. You tell me what it means. Just rest there for a minute. I want to hear what it means from you. You're a great yogi. You'll know what it means. Come and let me know when you know what it means. I already know what it means. Anyone else who wants to know, well, Glenn, you leave the room. No, Glenn, we want to hear from you what it means, and you come back and tell all of us. Because this is very straightforward what that means. Now, see, that can be interpreted in a very dualistic way that leads to nuclear missiles flying off in all kinds of directions. Or it can lead to world peace. So that's, I'll give you that little carrot.
Coming from a psychological background, when I'm working with people and I have a sense of intuition, I suppose, or I have a sense of what's going on and what I'm supposed to do and this sort of thing, I have also within the psychological tradition, the question comes up, okay, is this genuine intuition or is it my projection? Is it genuine? Is it my projection? Is it, you know, because either way, I don't know where it comes from. I mean, I can't say it's a rationalization. Am I seeing something that's part of my little embodied world, like I see the world sort of thing, or is it
This is such a great question. It's such a wonderful question about healing. This is what the question is about, really, healing. You are a psychologist and you want to give benefit to your clients who come to you. And you want to understand them in such a complete way that you can speak some words to them that will provide incredible healing, where just all of a sudden they'll get it and their problems will be lessened and maybe fall away entirely. I know this is your goal. It's the goal of everyone involved in a healing profession. But first of all, we have to know ourselves totally and completely before we can ever be able to enter into a healing relationship that is beyond cause and effect. So there's the kind of healing that is the Band-Aid approach of cause and effect. And then there's the healing that is totally beyond causality. So that's why you came here. You know there's something more than what you're learning in the books. And when we get together with another person, if we take that person to be a whole bunch of labels, a whole bunch of points of view, then we have no meeting. There's absolutely no meeting. But when we realize ourselves to be awakened awareness through understanding all our own points of view as awakened awareness, all points of view with nothing left out, then we don't take ourselves to be anything anymore. All our points of view are resolved in basic space. There's only the pristine reality of our own awareness. When we realize that for ourselves, then we realize it for everyone else. that there's nothing going on with anyone else either, that they, everyone else is that too. Everyone else is you. And then when we come together with another person, that's when healing can occur. It can't occur any other way. It'll just be a Band-Aid approach any other way. When you sit down with another person as awakened awareness and see that person is awakened awareness too, no matter what they may take themselves to be, that is a healing relationship. And in that, you know, you'll know just where to dance, just where to dance. Without being uptight about it, you know, like, oh, am I remembering all the right things? Will this theory work or that theory? How about the theory that ends all theories? How about that one, the non-theory, the theoryless theory? This is such an, this is the basis of all true healing, and certainly we, as global humankind, we need this so much right now. We need to stop taking ourselves to be all our points of view, realize that they all are the glory of our awakened awareness, and that this is so for everyone else too, and share this in a simple human way, where we all come together in a way that we're non-dual. We're non-dual, that we have that non-dual perspective that is pervasive in global humankind. This is the easy psychotherapy, you know. It doesn't have any objective supports. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But all healing, even if we're a surgeon or something like that. I have a sister who's a surgeon, and one of my daughter-in-laws is a cardiologist, and daughters-in-law. And even if it's something where we're performing surgery or something like that, if we go to the surgery taking the person to be a bunch of diagnoses and points of view, then we're coming to that surgery entirely within the realm of cause and effect. But if the surgery, and my daughter-in-law is just so remarkably beautiful in this way, is just a full expression of awakened awareness as the heart, then the kinds of things that can occur are really amazing. You know, we all have this within our power. It's inherent. It's inherent. It's innate. This is the way we're meant to be with each other. The natural state of our being. We'll sit quietly for a few moments before we end. If you have questions, please come back tomorrow. I would be so happy to answer them then.